Welcome to IBBA Insights, providing expert advice on buying or selling small businesses. IBBA Insights is presented by the International Business Brokers Association, the world's largest nonprofit organization for those helping others sell or buy businesses. Now, here's your host, Crest Diglio.
Today, we're going to explore some of the biggest myths and misconceptions about selling a business. If you're a business owner, this is a show you don't want to miss. It might not be today, tomorrow, or next year, but one day you will sell your business and you owe it to yourself to be informed. After all, your business takes care of your family, healthcare, education, vacations, cars, recreation, retirement, and just about everything else in life. You spent your time, energy, resources to make your business what it is today. In many cases, you've sacrificed time with your family and friends to build your business so that you may provide for you and your family. So if you're a business owner, why is it important for you to listen to this episode? Because the majority of business owners who sell their business, they're selling for the first time and sometimes the only time. There's a lot riding on this, and I want to help you maximize your chances of a successful and profitable sale. Well, what better way to do this than to have a guest who truly understands the selling process, because he hasn't done it just one time, not two times, not 10 times, but over 40 times. Trust me, he has valuable life experiences to share with you today. I'd like to introduce you to my guest, Mr. Ace Chapman. Ace, welcome to the show.
It is great to be here with you. As we were just talking a little bit before we jumped on, I love talking about this stuff. It's something that I've been doing for the last 20 years of my life, and still can't get enough of it. I tried to take a break for a little while and realized that I was bored doing anything else.
Well, you and I have some things in common then, because I've been a business broker for 20 years, going into my 20th year, and I've never heard a story quite like yours. I mean, I have one client that's bought and sold 12 businesses with me, but that pales in comparison to your experiences. When I heard your story, I had to have you on the show that I could share it with our listeners. So again, thank you so much for coming on today.
Glad to be here.
So I wanted to ask you, and I think a great way to start would be just to ask you, how did you get in the business of buying and ultimately selling businesses? Because that's kind of unique. It's not exactly like flipping houses.
Definitely not like flipping houses. And I wish I could say that I had foresight and was had some kind of vision that made me realize that, oh, this is something I'm going to love doing for the next 20 years. The truth is, we're talking a little bit about politics for jumping on, which is always a treacherous place. But I study political science, and it's one of the reasons that even to today, you know, I love being a part of politics. But while I was a student at Colgate University and kind of going down this path, I'd always had an interest that was entrepreneurial. You know, I was the kid that was selling candy at school at 5 years old and moved on to selling the other things I got older that people wanted. And what I realized, though, was that, you know, I felt like the safer path for me was studying political science and becoming an attorney and maybe getting into government one day. But while I was a student, I was playing around in a stock market simulator that allowed me to take fake money, put it in the stock market. And this is in the 1999 when everything was kind of new on the internet. And the issue that I was having was this website was always crashing. Sometimes my points would reset, and it was really annoying. And I'd reach out to customer service. Nobody contacted me back. And I read a little bit about the founders and just through some research and realized that maybe these guys just need an intern. I'll come in and intern for them over the summer and help them out. But when I wrote them an email, they wrote back and said, hey, we're actually trying to sell this thing. We've moved on to another project. That's why everything's kind of a wreck. If you know somebody wants to buy it, then let us know, and maybe we can sell it to them, and you can be an intern for them. And I'm thinking, why would I find you a buyer just so I could be an intern? But that ended up being my very first deal. They wanted $70,000 for this thing that was making $60,000. My valuation process was really simple. It was the fact that Colgate cost $180,000 at that point to go to. And I have friends that were graduating, making about $30,000 a year. So I'm thinking, okay, $70,000 for $60,000. Had no idea what multiples were or any of that. And I only had $3,000 in my bank account, so I had to get them to finance about half. Had a buddy that invested, convinced him to put up $15,000. And I, then for the rest, I did something that I don't recommend that anybody does. And my parents would have killed me if they found out I did. And that was take out some credit cards to make up the rest.
You believed in yourself. I mean, you know, to be a business owner, you have to be a risk taker. Because it's certainly not for the faint of heart.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I was nervous. The funny thing is, at that point, I was a lot more nervous about one of the credit card companies mistakenly sending a bill to my parents' address as opposed to my school address. So that was what I was most nervous about. And that allowed me just to focus on the business work and not be too nervous about the business.
So, you know, I love that. So you went from Colgate to the School of Hard Knocks, huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
so you stumble upon and you wind up buying your first business and tell us about that experience. So you bought the first business, but talk about the first time you had to sell a business. So now you have it and you decide, I'm going to sell it. How did you navigate through that process?
Yeah, this is one of my first lessons. You know, I had some people who had come to me, actually Ameritrade, because we had this huge database of young investors who were interested in buying and selling, you know, at least Play Stock at that point. And so they were one of our largest advertisers, and they came to us and were interested in buying it. And still at this point, I kind of was just bumbling through the dark. I didn't know anything about valuations. I didn't know what was fair, what wasn't. And so they came to me with a low seven-figure offer. And at that point, you know, I'm a couple years into it. I'm a 21, 22-year-old kid. I'm thinking, this is it. I'm a millionaire, and I'm going to make all of this money. And I honestly wanted to hold on to it, you know, keep it for a little while longer, and maybe it would turn into $10 million. Little did I know that, you know, at that point, we had grown it, and it was making $100,000, but they were willing to pay a 10 multiple for this thing. Now, as we all know, you know, that's a great multiple for a private transaction. They were public, so that 10 multiple turns into a 20 multiple for them and all of that good stuff. But for me, at that point, I felt like, well, no, this thing is probably worth a lot more than that. And it was the lack of having any advisor around me that allowed me to make the decision of, I'm going to just, you know, wait and get a higher offer and see what else comes around so that maybe I can sell this for even more. And that's when, maybe about 6 months later, the dot-com bubble burst. And of course, that offer went away. A lot of our advertisers went away. I was dealing with the asset that was worth a lot less. But I was still looking back and you know, with especially with my return on the business, I made money on that business, but I ended up selling it for about $80,000, only $10,000 more than what I paid. You know, I got a great return because of I made $100,000 for about 3 years or so. So the $70,000 turned into a lot more money. But there's nothing like opportunity cost to make keep you up at night. You know, not taking that $1 million offer was very painful, to say the least.
Well, you know, that's a humbling experience. I mean, most people don't realize that. They go to sell their business, and sometimes they get their first offer, and they go, wow, if someone's willing to pay this much money, it must be worth so much more. And what they don't realize is sometimes there's just a reason why that company or individual wants to buy your business. I did a deal in the voiceover IP field. And another larger company came in and they weren't in this specific business sector. So they decided, you know, they're going to make an offer that was probably three times what the industry would call for. And I remember the seller telling me, well, we think we can get more money. I said, I think you're crazy. You should take this offer that, you know, we can negotiate a little bit, but, you know, they may be able to pay a little more. But this is a phenomenal offer. But it's hard to see that sometimes when someone comes at you with an offer.
Absolutely. And it takes being in the market. Today, obviously, every day I'm on calls with sellers, I'm on calls with potential buyers. And what that allows you to do is be in the market. And if you're an entrepreneur that's not in the market, you want that person that's what they do all day long, because they're going to know, okay, what is the fair market value of deals that have this kind of income in this industry? You know, what's a fair multiple? What is the deal structure look like? Because the interesting thing is the real money isn't in a sales price. The real money is in what's the maximum that I can get out of the right deal structure that is the norm for the industry that the business is in.
Without a doubt. I mean, you start talking about some of the, you know, biggest misconceptions when people have concerning the sale of the business. And some of it's just like that, you know, well, I went on the internet and it said, you know, it's going to sell for this multiple, you know, or why should I hire someone and give away 8, 10, 12% of the purchase price when I can make it myself? I'm sure you've never heard that one, right?
Absolutely. And we do a lot of work to create our own deal flow. We also do a lot of work to find buyers, but there is nothing like the low-hanging fruit of working with brokers on both sides. I mean, I have plenty of brokers that they know the types of deals that I'm looking for, because it's a lot of work to find the exact deal that you want to buy. And then it's a lot of work to find the exact buyer that's going to give you that premium. And that was the lesson that I learned on my first deal, and kind of started to do that work. As soon as I acquired my next business, I started trying to figure out, okay, who is my buyer going to be? And an interesting story, you know, my deal after that, I ended up rolling up some tanning salons and sold those to a customer. I really started priming people as I was turning that business around to become the buyer. And because, you know, it was funny, I'm sitting there with the buyers, and the wife I knew loved the business. She was a part of a lot of the rehabilitation the rehab we had done and the changes we made to the business. And she wasn't the only one. I kind of had this funnel of people that I was talking to about this business, because number one, it was a tanning business. For you folks that don't make it to see the photo on the website, I have a very great natural tan. Tanning wasn't something that was going to be my life's calling. So I knew I was selling this business at some point, and I was able to build those relationships. And it was a great thing. I remember sitting with the couple that was buying it. And, you know, the wife was the one that really wanted it. And the husband was like, well, you know, we may need you to come down on this, or we may need you to do the down payment this way, you know, all of these kind of things. And she stopped him, and she's like, you're going to make us miss out on this. We're going to pay what he wants. I'm like, there's nothing like that to make sure you get a good deal on the sale. And you have to do the work to find those right buyers that are willing to do that. And, you know, that's something that's been a part of each deal that we've done since then.
Nothing like understanding the person's motivation for doing something or creating the sense of urgency. It certainly helps. Okay. So now you sold your first business. You got into some other businesses, like you mentioned. So clearly you had the itch to do it again. What excites you most about selling a business?
I really don't get excited about selling. Is really the truth. You know, with where I am right now, every time I sell, I have to take that capital and reallocate it. You know, I'm a little ways from retirement and all of that good stuff. So I'm not so much spending the money or need the money. So it's about taking the understanding when I'm maximizing the value of the business, but also just waiting for that right buyer and looking for that right buyer. And that lesson was really reiterated. I bought a couple of units of a franchise that you guys may be familiar with. It's actually large now. This was back in the early 2000s, so it was a little bit smaller, but it's called Homevestors. And they have the signs to say, we buy ugly houses. And so I bought a unit in Tennessee, bought a unit in Alabama, and was running those two businesses, and it was doing really well. You know, this was 2004, I think I bought those. And then around 2006, I had a guy that approached me and wanted to buy them. And as you guys might be able to recollect, those are some really great years in real estate. And I'm thinking, yeah, I don't really want to sell like I could. But he put out an offer, and I told him, like, hey, it's not for sale. If you want to buy it, this is the price. And I remember I was at a birthday party, and he had made offers like under that price a couple times. and called me while I was at the birthday party, went outside. I just knew this was the time that he was going to say, okay, I'm going to meet your price. That's it. Let's get it done. I went outside and he's like, he had another offer. He's like, well, I can't give you what you're asking. I have to get a discount. And I'm like, do not call me again until you're going to pay me what I asked for. And I guess an angel is looking out for the younger, less wise, lack of humility, Ace Chapman at 26 years old. And he fortunately bought it. And there was just it was a lot of debt. There was a lot of real estate. He was a wealthy guy and could weather the storm. But we all know what happened at the end of 2007, 2008, maybe about 9 months after we closed that deal. And I would not have been able to weather that storm.
Unbelievable. I mean, sometimes it's good to have an angel looking over you. And sometimes it's good just to know what you have. I mean, I think you'll appreciate this. When I teach courses for the IBBA, specifically selling businesses, what I always tell the students, I said, the seller always wants to tell you, well, I want to sell when I'm at the exact top, when we've hit our exact height of the business, and we don't want to leave anything on the table. And I always respond by saying, the only way you truly know that you peaked and you hit the top is when you start going the other direction, and then good luck trying to sell the business. It makes it extremely difficult. Sometimes you just have to realize now is a good time. I'm going to get my price. And like you said, reallocate it towards something else. So Ace, there are a lot of business owners listening today that have no intention of selling the business today, but they know someday they might. What advice would you give them about when they should start preparing for the sale of their business?
Just day one. I mean, like I said, the difference for that first lesson made for me was every deal I do, day one, I'm not only preparing the business itself for sale, which I'm sure you talk a lot about that. There's a lot of work that just goes into preparing the business for sale. Bottom line is we get businesses at a huge discount a lot of times just because there hasn't been any preparation that gets the business ready for sale. And any person that's off the streets coming to look at that business isn't going to be interested because everything is in shambles behind the scenes. And they're like, I don't know how to take over this. And so we become their only option for selling that business. And I see the other side of this. Most people don't think about selling until they have to, until there is that health issue, until there is that divorce. And that's the nightmare. And so it's always for sale. So that's kind of why I say, it's not that I get excited about selling. It's just like, every business that I have right now, we've got 31 or so in the portfolio right now. All of them are for sale at any given point. And so it's from day one, I'm preparing the business for sale. And the other thing I'm doing is I talked about in the case of the salons, I'm looking for buyers. I'm literally looking for buyers. I'm letting brokers know, even if the business isn't listed, hey, if you bring me a great deal on this, I am happy to pay your commission and we'll close. I'm happy to sell this business. So at any given point, that inventory is available and for sale.
I love when business owners tell me my business is not for sale. I said, your business is always for sale. I said, someone came in today and offered you $10 million. Would you sell it? Well, of course. I said, well, look, your business always has to be for sale. And the more prepared you are, the better chance you're going to have of not just selling it, because you can always sell something, right? Sometimes you have to sell it at a discounted price because nothing is in order. But if you want to maximize the sale of your business, it should always be prepared to be sold, whether you're going to sell it or not. So that leads into the next question. In your experience, and on this show, we want to talk about the misconceptions and the myths of buying a business. What are some of the biggest misconceptions you think business owners have concerning the sale of a business?
Number one is that they're going to get all the cash up front at closing.
That would be nice.
It would be lovely. And every once in a while, it'll happen. But for the most part, that's just not the reality of the way that these assets work. You're transferring something that requires somebody else, not just to own the asset, but to be able to operate it. And that requires you to train them and make sure they're in place and ensure that, your knowledge is transferred and capabilities, you know, even connections to employees outside of inside of the business, as well as the customers, clients outside the business and suppliers, et cetera. So that takes some time to have all of that transfer. And most importantly, I feel like when you're doing seller financing or earn out, it shows that you have faith in the business and that you're not selling something that, you know, you see something that's about to take it off the cliff that nobody else is going to be able to see. And, you know, when you compare this asset to the stock market, the reason the SEC exists is that they know if you are an outsider, you're at a huge disadvantage to anybody who has a clue about what's going on in the business. And they want to make sure that there is balance there in information. And with these smaller deals, there's just no way to balance that information. So, yeah, that would be the biggest misconception, is that I'm going to get this sales price and get all my cash at closing.
Well, let me share a couple of scenarios with you that I've heard or seen through the last 20 years or so. So you have a business owner that's looking to sell, and they say, well, yeah, I want to sell. And I know it's, you know, November, and I want to sell sometime next year. I really want to be retired by March. So I think maybe the beginning of the year, I'll start the process of selling my business, because selling a business is easy, and you should be able to sell it in 1 to 3 months.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there are a lot of people that they also just think that it's like selling a house even. And it doesn't take as much work. Like, hey, can't you just show the house when I'm not there and have them walk through and just bring me an offer? Tell me once I have an offer. The truth is, it's just a lot of work. Putting everything together is a ton of work. Putting the prospectus, getting the financials, you know, that's one of the biggest pains when I'm dealing with somebody who is a direct contact and we don't have a broker in between, is just, it's like pulling teeth just to get everything that we need to be able to do due diligence on that deal. And then you get to the point where you have everything and you have the LOI and you're getting the financing together and all of that. And that takes time. And so the whole process differs from real estate in that it's just not about consumers. You know, even when you look at the legislation around deals that go bad, what most of the judges say is, hey, you're a big boy. You're buying a business. You're not some consumer that bought a product and things went wrong. You know, they look at us, whether you're buying a $100,000 business or you're Warren Buffett, they put you in the same category. It's like, hey, once you come over to this side, you're a big boy. And so what that means is that on both sides, you've got to do the work to make that happen. Whereas with, you know, buying a house, banks make that process really, really easy. And you go out, you put in an application for a mortgage, and they look at your credit. In some cases, they don't even ask for anything else. So it's an easy process for that.
Yeah, much different than buying a house and anything they've ever done. So what about the myth or the misconception when you start talking about books and records or financials with a business owner, and they go, books and records, you know, when I get ready to sell, then I'll clean them up. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, that's a part of that process of being prepared to sell that I mentioned. I hope that the listeners don't end up at the other end of a situation where we're getting the business at a major discount simply because they weren't prepared to sell the business. And, you know, what we like to do is go above and beyond. And so at the very basics, you want to have all of your accounting in order. And it's funny. I mean, several of my businesses have been sold by my accountant where they see everything that's going on, and they can go to another person that they're doing the accounting for. And, you know, just having your records in place draws people to your business and makes the transaction really, really easy. The other thing, though, is going a step further. What I like to do if I'm a seller, what I want to do in my business is that's going to set me apart from 99% of the SMBs that are going to be on the market, is I want to create SOPs. And that's standard operating procedures. You know, we create a little folder that goes through all the aspects of the business. When I'm sitting across, we start working on that during even the training because we want to be able to run that business ourselves and use it. And so we're getting that information from the seller. And then we kind of build on top of it. But when I'm sitting across from the seller and, you know, I'm talking to them, what I understand is that there are things in the back of their head that they're worried about in the business that maybe they're not going to tell me. And, you know, of course they're going to have concerns. That's only legitimate. And what I want them to do is just tell me what those concerns are. And so I'll ask them, you know, tell me just one of your biggest concerns. And they might say, well, I'm worried that the manager might leave because that's going to put a bunch of work on me. And I don't know as much as they do. And yeah, the business is working really well with them. But what if they leave? And for me, what I'll do is pull out the folder. I'll go to employees. I'll go to the manager section. I'll say, well, what we've done here is, you know, we tell you what to do. As soon as the manager leaves, these tasks will be split between these two people. You know, this is where you want to advertise to get a new manager. This is what the ad exactly that we use. This is the questions that we asked when she came in for the interview. This is the training that we took her through. And, you know, and then in the meantime, we've already trained these other two employees to be able to take on those tasks. And then they may ask, you know, well, I'm also worried about the marketing. And then we can flip over to that section and say, here are the things that we've tested. Here's what's worked. Here's what didn't. Here's some of the things that we recommend. And when you can bring that franchise-like system in a business that is making money right now, so they don't have to start from scratch like a franchise, that is the best of both worlds. I really prefer, one of the things that I really prefer is I tell a potential buyer, I want you to go out into the market because you're not going to value my business as much as you should until you go and you see that seller with their wrecked financials and a couple of, and their tax statements not matching up to what the financials are. Yeah. Some of the cash that they're trying to explain that they're taking out. And, you know, just all of these things. It's not going to make sense.
Well, you're differentiating yourself from the competition. The competition might be the other business that's for sale. In the beginning of the show, I mentioned that most business owners that are selling, they're first-time sellers. Well, the same thing for buyers. They're first-time buyers, and they just don't know. So now when you present an opportunity in such a way with policies and procedures, it makes the handoff that much more easier. Plus now when they're comparing it to the other businesses in the market for sale, they're saying, wow, the other companies don't have that. So you're creating value and hopefully increasing the multiple and the price that you're able to command for that business because it becomes more attractive. So we talked about the myths and misconceptions. So my takeaway is it's not easy. It's not going to happen overnight. You probably shouldn't do it on your own. You should have help. And your books and records are important if you'd like to get the maximum dollar amount, you know, for the business. So those are all great points. So now you've done this, right? You have all the experience in the world. But 40 transactions later, what do you do different now than you did your first couple of transactions?
A lot of that is the things that we've talked about. So learning that day one, I want to start gathering potential buyers that might be interested. And I think it's our process is really interesting. I'm releasing some of the secret sauce here. So you're pulling it out of me. But you know, one of the things that we do is we will have people that we think are either strategic buyers or customers that may be buyers or current suppliers that may be buyers. And we want to start day one just building a relationship. It's not like we go to them and say, hey, we just bought this business. We want to, sell it to you. It's that, hey, this is who we are. You know, we bought this business. We do buy and sell businesses. It gives them a clue that one day we are going to sell the business.
I mean, let me jump in for a second. So, because that's an important factor. We have a lot of people that are listening to the show, and the business might be a small business. It might be a large business. But are you saying, regardless of the size of the business, you could always seek out and target from the beginning the person that might be or the company that might be the one to acquire you someday?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And typically, they're already related to the business. A lot of the companies we've sold, you know, when I talked about the tennis salon, she was a customer. When I talked about the real estate, he bought real estate from us. You know, that was the nature of that relationship. So in both of those cases, those businesses were sold to a related party. We have a $5 million deal right now that it's basically an affiliate company, advertising company, and one of our advertisers that advertises through that business wants to just buy the business. So a lot of times your best buyer, and going back even to the deal that fell through, Ameritrade, they were interested in doing the deal. It was a related party. So that's where you'll get the best multiples. And you want to build those relationships over a period of time. And I do that in a couple of ways. Number one, it's just giving them news. Hey, just want to update you. Here's what's going on with us. What's going on with your company? You know, how can we work together a little bit more closely? Hey, here's some changes that we're making to the business. Just want to announce that, you know, having a newsletter. And you may think, oh, like, this is boring stuff. Nobody's interested in it. But the person that, you know, out of those 20 people, 17 of them will have no interest at all. They're like, oh, another one of these newsletters about, you know, changes that Ace is making to that business they bought. But there are going to be two or three of them that something that you're doing is piquing their interest, and the improvements that you're making in the business is piquing their interest. As you start to get replies, or you have people that kind of raise their hand electronically and tell you and show interest in what you're up to, that's a signal that, hey, this could be somebody that it eventually ends up buying the business. And so we end up a lot of times with people approaching us. It's interesting how often that happens. I mean, like I said, I like doing deals in the sub $2 million range. But, you know, for my largest deal, which was 5.75, even in that world, as you get larger deals, that business, you know, it was out of the blue. We went through this process out of the blue. That company reached out, it's like, hey, let us know if you ever consider selling. And it's like, unlike what most people would answer, the answer is absolutely we would consider selling.
Yes. And how much would you like to pay me for the privilege of selling you the business? So, you know, you mentioned it earlier, and you're giving such gold nuggets out there for people that if they just grasp onto what you're saying. You mentioned something earlier. One of the things you also do is you'll reach out to other brokers and let them know about your business, whether it's for sale or not, because as you said, it's always for sale. But talk to me about the importance of a business owner, especially if they've never sold a business before, they've maybe only sold one or two. Why is it important for them to have professional representation from a business broker when they sell their business? What value does that add to them?
Because somebody like me is going to come in and get it at an amazing deal. No, I think the real key when you're a business owner is that it's just like anything else. I mean, you know, do you want, if you're doing something, do you want that brain surgeon that is doing it for the first time, you know? And it's like, he may be really young and be really, really smart. Or do you want that person that's done it in their sleep 100 times? And, you know, this is a game of nuance. And sometimes, you know, just like we mentioned earlier, you can get focused on even price and that be the wrong place to focus in the deal. And it's more about deal structure. And you want somebody who's experienced, not just to help you, but to help the buyer. I can't tell you the number of times that I have gotten a deal. And just this year, it's happened at least two that I can think of off the top of my head. Well, we bought a business. And the main reason we got the deal that we got was because they had a couple of buyers who came in, put a contract down, went through the process, either couldn't get financing, didn't really know what they were doing in due diligence, and got cold feet and had to walk away from the deal. And so then we end up the buyer of last resort when they just say, hey, you know, get it at a discount, take the business. I just don't want to have to deal with one of these amateur buyers again. So what is on both sides, even if you feel like, hey, I'm good. I'm going to be able to sell my business myself. I know enough about what I want out of the business. The truth is you want that broker that's going to guide that business buyer and give them the confidence that number one, that they're going about it the right way. Because I think a lot of buyers that, you know, there's a ton of buyers are first time buyers. And I think that one of the reasons that they end up getting cold feet has less to do with the business and more to do with them getting in and realizing, hey, I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, exactly. And, you know, and the broker involved or the intermediary involved, they obviously, there might be 100 buyers that call on an ad and only one of them is going to buy it. Who's got the time run a business and pre-screen and pre-qualify 100 buyers, and also, you know, going through the confidentiality, and do you have the forms and everything to make sure it's protected in the marketplace? So there's so much that goes into it. So, but Ace, before we get to the last question, I want to tell you something that might make you laugh. So there was a large physician's practice that was for sale, and they had a buyer. They called me up and they said, "Chris, hey, why don't you come to the meeting with me?" I said, "Absolutely." Well, the buyer wasn't expecting me to come to the meeting. The seller invited me on his behalf, so he hired me. And I walk in, and the buyer knew me. And you should have seen the look on his face. He went from all smiles to like you just stole his favorite toy, because he knew my walking in, because the seller had professional representation, that business no longer was going to be bought at a discount. It was going to be bought at market or at a fair price to the seller. He lost a lot of his negotiating tool. He thought he was in the prime position, but he wasn't.
Yep, I see it all the time.
It's funny, right? But it happened. So we're coming to an end, but I have one last question I want to ask you. What advice would you give someone who owns a business and they're considering selling?
If they're considering selling right now, I think that one of the things that people take for granted is that SOP. I kind of talked about it a little bit, and it can get exciting to talk about potential buyers that may be strategic buyers. It can be exciting to think about like, hey, let me get all my numbers and stuff in order. But I think that differentiator that I've seen where a buyer is just like, wow, like nobody has this, is, and it's, you know, it's in the seller's head. It's not like you have to come up with stuff. You're doing it every day. It's just documenting what you're doing and then creating those systems and those processes to make a franchise-like business. And the reason I use the word franchise is because those sell at a premium. You know, it's they're not selling anything that's making cash flow today. They're not selling anything that has employees or even a location. And so people are paying this premium of $50,000 for a franchise fee, $100,000 for a franchise fee, and sometimes more, just for the simple fact that there are systems and processes in place. So if you can have those systems and processes and have the location that you know works and have employees that you know you're not going to have to train for months and then fire because they're terrible, and have the products that you know that sell and all that stuff already working, there is a huge market for that from buyers.
Absolutely. Ace, I got to tell you, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing all this information. I wish I had 3 hours to talk to you, because I think then we would just be able to scratch the surface on what you do and the importance for the seller. But from the IBBA, the International Business Brokers Association, their point of view and the podcast, really what we have to gain from a show like this and having people like you on is just to share your knowledge and experiences with the world, right? With the business owners that are out there that have never done this before, and they need guidance and they need help. And to hear someone that's been through it over 40 times is just invaluable. So why don't you tell the listeners, if you don't mind, how they can learn more about your story and you and what you do?
Absolutely. So I have a website and a blog. There's a lot more to learn in the blog. I go into specific deals and that kind of thing. So that's at acechapman.com. Feel free, if you're somebody who plays around on social media, I do have an Instagram. It's at ace.chapman. And if you want to reach out to me directly and you have a question or thoughts, you can send me an email directly to me. It's ace@acechapman.com.
Ace, thank you so much. I greatly appreciate you having you on the show today, and continued success with all that you do. You certainly, your hard work has paid off, and it's certainly deserving. I hope everyone out there enjoyed the interview today with Ace. I mean, I personally loved listening to his perspective on selling a business today compared to when he began many years ago. So if you own a business and want to have a successful sale one day, today's information is absolutely invaluable. In fact, start over, listen to this again, and you're gonna pick up more and more the more you listen to it. So we have many great interviews coming your way in the near future. For more information about our show and future episodes, please visit ibba.org. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to talking with you next time.